Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very happy to have with me today on University Matters two guests, Dr. Cynthia Formosa and Mr. Alfred Gatt. Just a few words about my guests. They're here today, obviously, because they work together on projects. Cynthia Formosa qualified as a state registered podiatrist from the Department of Health in Malta in February 1989. She worked as a senior podiatrist with this department from 1989 to 1994. She then left the health department and went on to read for a Master of Science degree in podiatry, which was awarded in 2003 from the University of Brighton, United Kingdom. She has also been awarded a PhD in podiatry in October 2009 from the same university. Her research was entitled Culture and the Management of Diabetes in Malta. She has also published a paper in connection with this research in April 2008 entitled Influence of National Culture on Diabetes Education Outcomes in Malta. This paper was published in the journal Diabetes and Primary Care. Another paper entitled Identifying Changes in Diabetes Care will be published in 2011 in the journal Practical Diabetes International. Two other papers are also in progress, and Cynthia Formosa, Dr. Formosa, is currently working on full-time basis with the University of Malta as a lecturer and head of the podiatry department within the Faculty of Health Sciences, a post which she has occupied for the last 2 years. Mr. Alfred Gatt is an assistant lecturer at the Department of Podiatry and the Faculty of Health Sciences here in the university. He qualified in 1986. He set up the first diabetes foot clinic at St. Luke's Hospital in 1987. Since 1990, he has been head of Department of Podiatry Services with the Department of Health, and as such was responsible for podiatry services all over Malta and Gozo at all the hospitals and health centres. For 10 years, he also integrated podiatry with a rheumatology clinic at St. Luke's, then later at Mater Dei Hospital. Mr. Gatt obtained a master's degree in podiatry in 2003 with research on the effect of orthosis in hind foot pain in rheumatoid arthritis. He has taught at the university on a part-time basis for many years in biomechanics as well, which is a subject that all podiatrists have to study to a very high level. Last September, he resigned his DH, his Department of Health post of Manager of Podiatry Services, to become a full-time assistant lecturer at the Podiatry Department at the Faculty of Health Sciences. At present, Mr. Gatt is reading for a PhD at Staffordshire University with a research entitled A Biomechanical Investigation of Passive Ankle Joint Complex Dorsiflexion. Hope I've got that right. Yeah. Thank you both very much for coming in today. Obviously, what we're going to be talking about is podiatry. Probably we will talk about specifically about diabetes and its effect on the foot. But perhaps as an introduction, Mr. Gatt, you might talk to us a little bit about really the question of what is podiatry?
First of all, thank you very much for inviting us here. Podiatry goes by many names. In the old times in England, it used to be called chiropody, then podology. The correct name is podiatry. A lot of people, of professionals, are still known as podologists around Malta. The difference between podology and podiatry is that podology is the teaching of podiatry, of the foot. You know, it's concerned with learning, while podiatry is treatment of the foot. Okay, so we try and treat foot problems. Well, basically, podiatry is that profession which deals with the treatment of various conditions affecting the foot. These conditions can be either localized in the foot, they can arise from other problems in the foot, or else they can be the result of systemic disease like diabetes. It's over the past 25 years, I was one of the first course in podiatry in Malta. It has grown substantially. I remember when we qualified in 86, our first year we saw about 1,000 patients. It was a big thing, 1,000 patients. Now the podiatry department, the Department of Health, you know, caters for about 80,000 patients a year, 8,000 appointments a year.
My goodness, that's a huge amount.
It's a huge amount, and well, the reason is because at some point or other in a person's life, everyone is going to have a foot problem. Now, not everyone comes to us, obviously. Not everyone comes to the podiatry department at the health centers or whatever. So I calculate probably the actual number of patients that podiatrists see, including private practice and everything, would be like about double that amount. Wow. So it has grown really, really in a.
And the professional profile of podiatry has been enhanced, yes, over the years.
Yes. Obviously, when we're a small group, the first group was eight people, second group was about eight as well. So, you know, when you're a very small group, there's not much you can do. But as we've gradually grown, and the Department of Podiatry at university now started, you know, integrating itself within the various structures at university. There was a time when there were only diploma courses. Now there are, you know, BSc courses. It's a four-year BSc course, and my colleague will talk about it later on. You know, and most, about 90%, I would say, of podiatrists now have professional qualifications, and they have postgraduate qualifications, and a few are doing their PhDs, and you know, academically. So it is gaining an impetus, and it probably there's, you know, in the future. I don't see something that will stop it. You know?
No, well, it certainly looks like an area that has room to grow.
Yeah.
Dr. Poromosa, we're talking about the courses that are being offered by the Faculty of Health Sciences, what was the Institute of Healthcare, now been raised to faculty status. What courses are actually being offered there?
Yes, currently we are offering the BSc undergraduate podiatry courses. To date we are running our fourth program, because as Mr. Gata said before, we used to have only diploma courses, but since 5 years ago we've started the BSc programs, and we are currently running our fourth program. We can say that we've seen the number of students also increasing. We started our first program with 8 students, but today, I mean the last program which opened this October, we have 15 students have recruited for this course, which is a good number for us, because since this program offers both theoretical and practical sessions, so there we can't really embark with large numbers. We need to have small groups so that we can give them very good practice in the clinical situation.
A bit of a challenge,
yes,
for
yes.
all the
it's a challenge for both the students, yes, and it's a challenge even for the practitioners, because obviously with podiatry being very specific, we offer a one-to-one clinical basis to our students with clinical educators. So it needs a lot of human resources.
And what people very often don't understand, and I've been trying to explain this, that not everybody that comes into Mater Dei is prepared to actually accept students working with
yes.
them. They have to be a certain type of patient. This is the same with dentistry. Not everybody who goes to do their teeth at Mater Dei is even prepared to accept
yes.
it. So there are great limitations when it comes to clinicals, because people yes. think perhaps we're making a big fuss about the mm. fact that we have to be careful about clinicals.
I think
clinicals.
This would be a good point here to reassure our audience that, and I'm sure that's not only in the podiatric profession, but in all professions, that when we are we let our students see patients, we are very responsible. I mean, they have, as I said, a one-to-one professional with them, so we are actually all the time looking at them and knowing exactly what they are doing. So, I mean, we should here reassure the audience that even if a student is to be seeing to them. There is a professional next to the student who knows exactly what's happening. As I said, at this point in time, we are offering the BSc course, but we are already planning a master's program, which we hope to start either next year or the year after. I mean, we're trying to opening it in October 2011. But because of all the paperwork, you know, and all, if we don't manage that, it will definitely open in 2012. So we are going a step further into master's programs too now.
During the course, what do they actually learn? Because one has to imagine that the listeners don't really know much about podiatry, as I myself don't know much about it. Perhaps you could say exactly sort of what kind of things do they actually learn during the course?
We start with the first 2 years, which is very anatomy and physiology based. So it's like a general program in the first 2 years. And then in the third and fourth year, we go more into specific modules, say like specializations in podiatry, like podogeriatrics, which is dealing with old adults, podopediatrics, dealing of children. We do some podiatric surgery. This course is also enriched by foreign external visiting lecturers. We've got some certain expertise which we feel that we do not have enough in Malta. We invite external lecturers from the United Kingdom who come and deliver a one-week intense module in that specific program, like subject, say like podiatric surgery is still new for Malta. We don't have any podiatric surgeons yet, so we invite an external lecturer from the UK who actually does a one-week intense module in podiatric surgery.
And you mentioned the various areas like children, geriatrics,
yes, etc.
Yes. When your students have completed their course and they've got their degree in their hand, and 4 years, an awfully long time, they obviously will be expecting to find some sort of job out there. What are the possibilities as far as jobs are concerned?
There's possibilities. There's quite a wide range of possibilities. To date, the Department of Health has also always employed the students who have graduated from university. But even so, they can work in private practice. Today with Malta and the EU and with our recognized degree, they can also work in all countries in the European Union. So they can work in the UK and all other countries. They can also decide to embark on research. So if they want to, you know, continue their PhDs again, the degree is recognized, so they can continue. To date, we do not offer PhDs in Malta, but they can go to the United Kingdom where they can follow such a program. And they can also decide to take the educational part, where maybe they would like to go into education. They can also follow a module which runs inside the university as a clinical educator, and then work for the university as clinical educators, teaching our students, obviously, the clinical practice, the clinical practical side. So really, there are quite a wide range of opportunities for them, apart from all the specialized clinics which have now opened. So again, if they have a particular topic which interests them, they can continue working, studying on that particular.
I mean, like I get asked this, like, why the foot? It's such a small area of the body. Why the foot? But then we do have specializations inside there. Like, we have practitioners with special interest in children, special interest in biomechanics, special interest in a lot of fields. And then you find yourself focusing so much on this particular area of the subject that, you know, a small area of the body, well, actually you will realize it's a huge thing.
Mm, of course.
And first of all, obviously, it's the complexity of the structure inherent, you know, in the foot itself. It's such a complicated part of the human anatomy, like the 26 bones, you know, and so many muscles.
Ask you how many bones there were.
Yes, and the function of the foot changes, you know, changes from a shock absorbing function into a rigid lever thing. So you know, it changes continually, and even doing what is known as gait analysis is like when you analyze how a person walks. What we call a gait cycle, it's like one step, which will occur in less than a second, basically about 600 milliseconds. In that area, so many things occur, which are so fast that you can't see them with your eye. So you need specialized equipment, like 3D motion capture systems, you need foot pressure analysis systems. So basically, the profession is as vast, as wide as you want it to be.
I can imagine hearing you speak. Obviously, one gets an idea of the breadth of the subject, and probably there is a great need for probably quite expensive equipment. And,
does
the department have good equipment at the moment? Are we using EU funds to get further equipment and that sort of thing?
Yes, I think the Department of Health is investing in new equipment. The university is also investing. We are getting funds from both the DH and also
to enhance our laboratories.
Yes, to enhance our laboratories.
You were mentioning earlier, Dr. Pomoz, the research possibilities. We were saying that there are various areas, and looking at what you very kindly sent me in preparation for this program. I mean, I can see that diabetes or things related to the foot through diabetes has been the subject of your research. Perhaps you could give us an idea of the significance of diabetes in general in the population here in Malta, and then more specifically to the foot.
Yes, currently there are about 10% of the Maltese population living with type 2 diabetes, which is quite a large number when compared to the 2 to 5% again of other neighboring European countries. So we have a high percentage of diabetes. From the literature, we know that unfortunately diabetes brings with it a number of complications. But from the literature, we also do know that if these risk factors are, if we see to them early, we could avoid drastic complications like necrosis, gangrene, and finally amputation. And I think this was what prompted us in order to conduct this research, which we are currently conducting. That we were interested in looking at type 2 diabetic patients. As Mr. Gatt very well said, the Department of Health had initiated a screening program in July, and we were interested in looking at the data and what the findings of the screening program.
Perhaps you could just briefly give us the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes, because people might not.
Yes, surely. Type 1 is usually seen in young children, and type 2 is usually seen in patients over 40 years or more or older. Although today we are seeing type 2 diabetes in even younger adults because of the sedentary life we are living, because of the food we are eating. And so we are seeing type 2 diabetes.
It's very often linked to obesity.
Yes, it's very often, and to the sedentary life. Mm. The sedentary life.
And why does it affect the extremities?
Diabetes, unfortunately, doesn't only affect the extremities, okay? It affects the eyes, the kidneys. Yes, the feet is one of the systems which is also it affects, okay? So the feet and diabetes can be affected in two ways, really. First, poor circulation. And secondly, also the nerves could be affected because of diabetes, and we could have what we call peripheral neuropathy, which is lack of sensation in the feet. So these are two big problems which during screening programs we do look out for. We check the circulation by checking for pulses, and we also check for neuropathy testing with monofilaments to check the sensation of the patient. So that will give us an idea on how the actual disease, diabetes, is affecting the feet. If we do find signs of both poor circulation, peripheral vascular disease, and neuropathy, then that is an early warning sign for us that we need to take action. We need to look after that particular patient's feet more.
And in fact, this is... It shows just how important the screening is,
yes.
Because the message I'm getting is the earlier you discover things, the less likely it is that you're going to have these problems.
At the moment, we don't know how extensive foot disease is. What we know is that we normally have about, it's coming down, like last year, there were about 140 major amputations. And when we talk about an amputation, it means many things. First of all, the hardship on the patient, who will be probably confined to a, you know, probably to a prosthesis, and or in several cases, they can be confined to a wheelchair or to a bed. And we have to know how extensive this problem is. And we have to know, okay, we know how many amputations we have, unfortunately, but we have to know where the problem is coming from. Obviously, I know diabetes, but there are a lot of other issues, the main two being neuropathy and peripheral arterial disease. And from there, then we can try and find out how we are going to reduce this big burden. As I was saying, it's a big burden on the patient, first of all. It's a big burden on the health system. It's a big burden on the country, unfortunately. Like looking at it this way, obviously the more we're concerned about is how it's going to affect our patient. But it's also going to affect the whole country. Because you need extensive rehabilitation, you need extensive services for these patients who unfortunately end up with a missing limb or two, maybe. So this data will inform us on how to extend our services then, and which areas of the service needs to be improved upon, which areas need to be strengthened, or which new areas need to be addressed. So besides for knowing for academia's sake, you know, we also need to know these things in order to plan our services better.
And it fits in also with a general prevention policy, yes, as well. I mean, yes, there are obviously, yes, other diseases, now, not just diabetes, that can be prevented.
Most of Maltese listeners are familiar now with the breast screening, for example, program. And we know there's a Department of Health commitment to provide gold standard services by 2015. You know, so that is where we are aiming. We're aiming very high. We are hoping that, you know, all diabetic patients will come to a screening, but obviously that will not happen. But from my old post, I can say this, but we are hoping to have this readily accessible to everyone. Because one of the most basic criteria is, if a person is diabetic, this person needs to have at least one annual screening. Now, we have devised a tool, a very comprehensive tool for this research, so that we don't just check the pulses, and we don't just check the neuropathy levels. We also check joint mobility. We also check the person's knowledge. We also check to see if this person has any, for example, has this person been taught anything about diabetic foot problems? Do they know that incorrect shoes might cause an ulcer and ultimately an amputation? You know, because even an educational services are known to be very important in the diabetes sector.
Is there a hereditary element in type 2 diabetes?
Or? There is a hereditary element. Yes.
Because it can be exacerbated, obviously, with the
obviously.
With other reasons.
Other reasons, as we said,
like obesity.
Exactly. Sedentary life. Don't like to walk. So.
What about the treatments in general on the foot? I mean, we've spoken about amputation, which of course is the most dramatic and drastic
yes.
of them.
Yeah.
Are there any sort of new ideas or old ones that are can be sort of utilized, maximized before getting to that stage?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we advise from here. We would like to take the opportunity to advise all diabetic patients to visit regularly their podiatrist, even for the smallest and the minor problem. I mean, if they are unable, a lot of diabetics sometimes, obviously because of old age, sometimes even just because they can't see well. So you can't see their feet well, so or they can't bend well. So they might have even difficulty like cutting their nails. And again, person cuts his nails wrongly, that could start off a problem. It could start from a small ulcer and then progress slowly to something bigger. So that is where we're talking about education. It's important that diabetic patients have the knowledge. They know either what they need to do or to whom they need to go if they are not able to care for their feet themselves.
What about the state of your research right now? I mean, you are embarking on new research. How far down the line are you at the moment? Still at the hypothesis stage?
Or? No, at this point in time, we are inputting the data into our database. As Mr. Ragat said, we had devised a tool, a screening tool. So till now, currently about 150 people have been screened. We are taking all that data. We are inputting it into our database. And we also have a mentor in the United Kingdom who is mentoring us in statistical analysis and the way forward with the statistics. So we plan to go there in March. When we have all this data all set up in our database, and then we'll take it from there.
And this is new research in the sense that, I mean, obviously there are experts in diabetes who've done research in various areas,
yes.
But I think this is the first time that the foot has been sort of homed in on as a subject.
Yes. This is the first time that I think the risk factors leading to foot problems, that we are actually looking at them. And we can say that although, as I said, we are still in the very early stages of the research, but we can see a lot of trends in the data, sort of like we were, we were sort of shocked to see how many patients in Malta suffer from hallux valgus, which we consider as a foot deformity. Maybe for a bunion. This is a bunion.
Uh-huh.
So we were surprised to see that nearly most of our patients all presented with a bunion, which foot deformities is known to be one of the risk factors of developing ulceration. So yes, it was a sort of like something new to us, because, as I said, we knew that our type 2 diabetic patients might present with even minor arterial disease. We knew that they might present with early stages of neuropathy. But certain things like foot deformity, certain things like limited joint mobility, we were a bit surprised to find these
patterns emerging.
Yes. So,
well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. I'd like to thank Dr. Cynthia Formosa and Mr. Alfred Gadd for coming to On University Matters today.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes. Wish you luck with your research.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.